Okay, dudes and dudettes, you are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. I'm Noel Clark. Don't you ever, ever, ever touch that dial.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 389 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we've been on the run from an alien invasion for 2 weeks now, but it's okay. They seem to move really, really slowly. I'm Haley.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Kier. This week, season 17 of our classic era comes to a close with the black hole-bending Fourth Doctor adventure, The Horns of Nymon. And if you didn't think that you could possibly hear a villain's name repeated often enough in one story, this ought to do it. I'm clocking in at least 80 repetitions of Nymon through this one.
What were the bad guys again? I can't recall for some reason.
The Minotaur.
Was the Minotaur.
Are you implying that this story might have stolen some elements from Greek mythology?
Well, I'm gonna ask about that. Specifically, how much it did or didn't decide to pull from Greek mythology, and whether that worked to its advantage or disadvantage. But we will get to that momentarily. But off the cuff, though, at first blush, Jay, how did you feel about the Horns of Nymon as a? We'll get into explaining why this is later, but an unexpected season 17 closer.
It left a bit to be desired, honestly. Slightly underwhelming.
Okay, underwhelming. That's an interesting descriptor for it. Haley, what was your take on it?
It kept glancing at stories that I knew, and then not being like those stories. I don't think it holds up well if it's a season finale, but there's probably a reason why that's the case.
Okay, not to tip our hand too early, but there was supposed to be a story in between here, and there was a bit of an issue because of some things going on in 79 in the UK, a lot of union strikes that actually halted production of a story that was supposed to happen in between, which was Shada, and that was going to, I don't know if that necessarily was going to work to help salvage this one. But it would have at least given us something else to enjoy before this button things up at the close of the season. But I got to agree with you both. This is one that it kept teeing some opportunities up, and it had some glimmers of hope in terms of individual characters or some plot elements. And then it never really delivered on a vast number of them. Not all, but a vast number of them. Which seems to be a lot of the kind of collective response to this as I look out across, well, everything from critic reviews from the time to what things like the Paul Cornell and the rest of the crew with the discontinuity guide had to say about it. No. So let's dive a little deeper into this.
I have spoken with the Nymon.
And what does the Nymon say?
He speaks of many things. He speaks of the great journey of life.
Again? What does he mean by the great journey of life?
Mean? It is a metaphor.
For what?
He also speaks of the retribution he shall exact from you, Sorak, if you do not find that ship or get a fresh shipment of sacrifices from Aneth immediately. We must attack Aneth.
But Solid!
We must do it, Sorak.
We like to quantify Series 17 as being the season where you had Douglas Adams as your script editor, which means that there is a certain formula that you would like to see with anything that he put his hands on, which is this kind of a, over on this side of the scale, you put these really intense scientific thriller aspects, you know, some real high stakes stuff that has some sciencey, wyancey kind of things going on in there. And then you've got some comedy and silliness and goofery and almost absurdism on the other side. And you keep toggling the dial back and forth. We've seen that work successfully a couple times this season, maybe not consistently, but at least at a couple points. Do you see that in here in any respect with regards to what Anthony Reed handed over with his, you know, the planet that's about to be assimilated, with the tributes that were handing over the crystals, but also the sacrifices, I mean, all these little pieces that were going on. Did we have the material for an Adams-ish sort of balance?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it was... You kind of had everything set up where you had this, you know, this nebulous being that was, you know, the benefactor for this warring race that, you know, eventually, you know, gained this, you know, deific kind of status, you know, and they kept that kind of tucked away for a little bit. I just have to say this, you know, CSO curtain as the portal was just
yeah, well,
that was. Yeah, that was a thing. But I mean, it's all in all, like, I mean, I was kind of, you know, kind of excited when it started out. I'm like, all right, this seems kind of interesting. And yeah.
Well, I mean, you've got, even boiled down to its barest bones, you know, the whole idea of an invasion about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you send the scout troop over there first. The whole idea of you've got a character who is sort of playing both, or thinks he's playing both sides, as far as serving our or teeing things up for our new overlords, but at the same time he has grander plans that he thinks he's sort of working as a lone double agent to sort of take advantage of them because he feels that they are just dumb brutes. So there's some pieces there that you say, all right, I see where you can go with this, but I don't know necessarily that it delivered on either the intensity, maybe that was because of the way the monsters were conveyed or portrayed, or I guess when Romano travels back through and gets to see the conditions on the other side, maybe that could have been sold a little harder, I guess, to sort of up the intensity. I mean, I know that we can't have a crowd of Nymons running around. You only have a budget for a couple of costumes,
mm-hmm.
But she's got to sell it that it's a force. You know, it's a horde coming, kind of thing. I don't know. I just feel let down by a lot of the things that it promised. I don't know. Haley, did you know something?
Something I've noticed lately in Doctor Who stories is when they haven't built up enough tension by the end, just make something explode. It'll be fine.
Yeah, they've been saving a lot of the pyrotechnics for late episode 3 and into episode 4. Typically, you don't have a whole lot of stuff actually blowing up in the first few episodes. You might have K-9 throwing some lasers around, but he was sidelined through a lot of this we'll find increasing reasons. But yeah, I don't know if that's conscious or if it's sort of a formula, the pattern that they fell into at this point was to... All right, we got that episode 3 slump. All right, blow it up in episode 4.
Yeah, I mean, I never considered it that way, but yeah.
Mm. Haley, you had alluded to the fact that, I mean, we're clearly pulling in large swaths from Theseus and the Minotaur. You know, we've got their whole base is this labyrinthine sort of arrangement, at which point where even the doctor jokes that, haven't we been down this corridor before? Kind of, this looks just like, I swear, I can't find my way through this place. So the little things. And there's like a lot of, not anagrams. What's the word I'm looking for where I rearrange the letters? Please help me. It's tired. I'm tired.
Jumbles.
Is it? All right, we'll go with jumbles. There's a better grammatical
word. I think yes. Anagram is the word.
I thought anagram. All right. Anyway. Yeah, anagram. We'll call it.
I don't know.
If only we had some kind of computer device in front of us that we could search
Well, you got Seth was Theseus, but it didn't grab an. All right. Well, I'm gonna show my opinion on this right away. I felt like if they had stuck closer to the original myth and actually had one of these things where, you know, if it followed the adventures of Theseus a little closer and the Doctor was just there to sort of steer things along, mm-hmm. that actually would have been a more solid story start to finish, because this is a myth that has survived millennia.
Yeah.
Because it's a good story.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna use that as an allegory, heck, grab it wholesale, you know, or at least more than you did. So I don't know.
Either stick closer or stray farther. Like, don't evoke the story and then not deliver. Right.
Because, I mean, if you take something like this and say, okay, we're going to stick really close to it, and this is the basis for the, like, word of this spreads to, you know, spreads across the universe, and this is where the legend of Theseus and the Minotaur came from on Earth, then great. That way you can kind of fudge it a little bit, but you're close enough that you're like, okay, no, I can see that turning into that story. Mm-hmm. But to have it this close, you're just going to sit and not acknowledge the reference at all. You're just going to be sitting there the whole time and be like, I like the story when they told it this way better.
Yeah, yeah. You almost start becoming cognizant of where it deviates.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even want that to register.
Yeah.
While I'm enjoying the story.
So it needs to be far enough away that you can enjoy it for its own story, or close enough and acknowledged that you can then play with it.
Mm-hmm. Only comparison I can make, this is horrible, but I'm going to do it anyway, is when Battlestar pulls really hard on Greek mythology, but only insofar as defining its character archetypes and then tells its own tale from there. So you got the construct that is mm-hmm. built under the guise of or using some core facets of the mythology as its building blocks, but tells its own tale using those components. You know, you stop trying to make connections by, you know, at some point into the BSG storyline and just say, all right, tell me your story. I get where you were coming with this. You know, you're naming, oh, Thrace, yeah, I get that. Okay, oh, Apollo, yeah, okay, I mm-hmm. get Apollo, sure. But then at that point, everything else just, it diverges, and you don't look back. So I have to give credit, but I don't know how much credit, to Gregory Crowden as Soul Deed.
Yeah, that was way over the top, and I loved every bit of it. Like, once I realized what they were going with, like, it was a, okay, he is not stopping. Like, his foot is all the way on the throttle. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to enjoy this. Yeah, but at first it's a little off-putting. You're like, okay, this guy is just, like, enjoys the scenery too much. Take his fork away. But mm-hmm. after a little bit, you know, I just leaned into it. I'm like, just enjoy it. I'm going to go with it.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of the first episode, I could have sworn they were saying Scarin, and then I saw that guy and his Time Lord collar, and I thought we were getting a very different story.
That's true. Yeah, a lot of the name choices started getting a little muddy in here. And here's the funny thing. If you ever read the novelization that Terrence Dix did for this, there's even characters that didn't have names on screen, like the pilot and co-pilot back at the beginning. And he mm-hmm. gives them names, and they're equally complicated. So it almost becomes kind of a Game of Thrones. Like, I got to keep track of all of these wonkadoo names that have tons of consonants in them and try and figure out how they all differ. So I think we're far better served for just looking at faces. In fact, I didn't write this down, but it's been sticking in the back of my head. This is probably the second, maybe in pieces, the third time I've watched this particular story. Not one of my favorites, but so be it. Of all of the stolen cargo, right? Your teenagers, these beautiful kids that are bringing the crystals over. There was one in the background. He has no lines. He's just this mop-headed blonde kid, that I swear to everything that if this were not, if I didn't know this was 1979 and the dates just don't work out, it's Dominic Monaghan. So I've got a hobbit in the background because it's the spitting image. And you don't even if you don't want to watch it all again, you only have to go 2 minutes in to episode one when the co-pilot goes back and says, "I'll check on the cargo."
Mm-hmm.
And you see him all lined up there. You will spot him in a heartbeat. I can't find out who's credited because he doesn't have a line, so he's not anywhere in the production credits.
Mm-hmm.
But if it isn't his older brother, I will eat my sock. So somebody help me on this. As far as overall awkwardness with this, especially knowing that this was the last production block that they were doing, because this was the last one filmed as well as the last one aired. This one actually did sort of work in chronological order with broadcast. Was it me or did it seem like there was something up with the degree of input from Lala Ward and Tom Baker on this one? Baker, like, Fourth Doctor was written very dark and brooding and kind of subdued in this one just from the dialogue, but even over mm-hmm. and above that, it felt weird.
A little bit, yeah. There was definitely not the same kind of chemistry that we enjoyed even earlier in the season with City of Death. Mm-hmm. You know, I did like the fact that they gave Romana more to do, mm-hmm. and you really got to see Lala Ward step out of Baker's shadow and show her own chops, but it did feel like there was something strained there.
And just overall, just kind of like they were sort of coming in at about 80%. Mm-hmm. Nothing was really, there are countless other times over the course of this season where you could tell that they were more invested in the dialogue. I'll take Nightmare in a way, because that was one where they were, because of the production aspect, they were all pissed off anyway. But just seemed like they were just kind of plugging through it and didn't want to lean into it as hard as they could have even in the most intense moments. It's just kind of disappointing in that regard. And that seems to be a lot of the common thread I've seen, is that people were sort of disappointed in what could have been through mm-hmm. this from both production and from performance, and just didn't end up getting out of it. But she got a Sonic.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
One that the Doctor almost stole. I gotta mm-hmm. wonder. I do see cosplayers tend to nail that one pretty well. I love that attention to detail when I see Romana Sonic out there. But I would love to see a Fourth Doctor walking around with a stolen
Romana Sonic.
Yep.
That would be pretty awesome.
It goes without saying, this story, because of what I had alluded to earlier with Shada, marks the last point for a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You'll both be pleased to know that David Brierley handed the microphone back over to John Leeson at this point to voice K-9 going into mm-hmm. into season 18. I kind of got the impression that neither of you were terribly pleased with Brierley's
not so much now.
Okay. Fair. This is also, as this closes out the season, it means that this is actually the last story that Douglas Adams was the story editor. So Bidmead comes in season 18 because Adams at this point, I think it's right around this time. I think it's like almost to the month that Hitchhikers first gets published.
Okay.
So his career trajectory is kind of, you know, faulting off in another direction at this point, along with a few other things. But that's one of the first things that you can stick a pin in and say, okay, well, this is clearly. It also means that Graham Williams, as producer, now steps out, and you've got a whole new era, a very problematic era, to be fair, with John Nathan Turner coming in. So with a producer change and a story editor change, that is effectively your showrunner in modern parlance. So knowing that you still have Fourth Doctor and Romana carrying over, it's one of those weird instances where imagine in modern iterations, if you were to have the same Doctor and same companions and a new showrunner step in.
Mm-hmm.
God, that's got to be awkward.
Just slightly, yeah.
And then just to add to the mix, you also have Dudley Simpson now no longer scoring all the incidentals and a lot of the bump music going through, and it ends up becoming done entirely, well, at JNT's insistence, hands it over to the BBC Radiophonic Workshop, so you get a lot of synth stuff, and it takes on a very different tone going into next season. And there's a costume change, but I don't want to explain exactly what that is yet, because, well, it happens, and it's very unusual, so.
Yeah.
Prepare to knit very different scarves. So looking back at season 17, with all the highs and lows and things, especially knowing that you were coming off of something like the Key to Time sort of encompassed season as well, in that's sitting in the rearview mirror. How did season 17 sit with you both?
It was a season.
that it was. I can agree, yep, with that part.
No one can say it wasn't. It's a little rocky.
Did it balance to the good? I mean, I know as we were going through, there were some stories where we said, oh, well, this was a gem. This is rock solid. Or this one was kind of, but it had its moments, or I could at least enjoy these things. And then we had a couple ones where we pushed back and said, God, I really hope I don't have to watch that one again. So where does it net?
So we have unfortunately watched this over the course of 2 or 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got the recency bias of what I remember versus probably what was the best of the season. So my opinion overall leans towards the negative, but that could just be because I don't remember the other stuff as well.
Okay. Well, if it's not particularly memorable as well, that also speaks to the impression that it leaves you with.
Yeah.
I believe we have podcasts discussing my memory.
Yeah, well.
I mean, honestly, it's the... I always go back and I'm like, oh, season 17, that's the one with City of Death. And so it, in my brain, it's always better.
Mm-hmm.
But having gone through it and like, it's like, oh, all right, this is the rest of it.
Right.
The fact that like City of Death is the only thing that I can really recall about season 17 most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like season 6 of Buffy. The musical episode's great. And then there's the rest of season 6.
Right.
Well, all right. There's the few things that sort of sit with me on this. I felt season 17 started really, really strong. Destiny of the Daleks was one where it struck us as kind of unusual,
mm-hmm,
because you know we were trying to wrap our heads around the new Romana. We had the Fourth Doctor dealing with the Daleks, which is a very interesting dynamic. You had a Davros story and so forth. City of Death. There's nothing more that really needs to be said.
Right.
Creature from the Pit was one that was sort of, you know, up and down, sideways. We kind of took what we could with it. Nightmare of Eden, we really didn't really care for terribly, yeah, much. And Horns of Nymon, I'm kind of getting the impression that sort of sits in that one as well. It's like, if you had stuck it, I would have enjoyed it better, but it just was. Not terrible, but not one that you would go write a blog entry about and say, I've just witnessed this story.
Right.
But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. There's a piece missing from this that I think does season 17 a disservice, and that's the unfinished story. So, I mean, with Shada being what should have sat between Eden and Horns, and they had gotten to a particular point in the production when they realized that there was just that the complexity of the strikes at the time and union shutdowns and things, that there was just no way that this was going to be done. And the delays were such an impact that they had to completely scrap the production, basically scrape the story into the trash and say, all right, it's just going to be a blackout point on the calendar, and we come back with Horns of Nymon when we're back to airing again. Thankfully, because we have it restored, reconstructed, and animated to complete the sequences that were never shot, and even bringing a very aged Tom Baker in from some 92 footage, I think, to sort of move everything forward a bit, sort of complete the tale. It's been released, so we can do it as part of our rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, I mean, I would want to.
What do you mean can? Don't you mean will?
Well, here's the thing. It's awkward because I had to really flip a coin on this. I was going to say, well, technically it should have been where it should have aired, should have been, it should be what we're covering this week.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd cover it with next time Classic Rewatch comes around the rotation, we do Horns of Nymon because that's the way it was supposed to be, darn it. But because that's not what aired chronologically on first broadcast, I said, you know what? If this was a gift that was handed to us later as a, but wait, there's more kind of thing, let's treat it like that. Maybe that'll mean that in retrospect, we can look back at season 17 and say, okay, yeah, I get it. Because the shot of story was entirely Adam's. This was another one that was his pen.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to put it up on the sort of pedestal with something like City of Death, hopefully. And it was something that was not only so much of his hand in the creative process, there were huge chunks of this story that he ended up using in his Dirk Gently books because he liked the premise of it so much. So
right.
You knew that he had investment on this. Yeah, I definitely want to make sure that we because you can go out, you can get the DVD, you can get the Blu-ray, you can get all the, there's a ton of additional material now, thankfully. That I think it's high time to be able to consider Shada as part of season 17 proper. So if you're both good with that,
I absolutely.
All right. Did we, I'll ask after we get a chance to do it, whether or not you felt I did it wrong in sequencing them as I did. So feel free to tell me I'm wrong later. I'll expect it later.
Okay.
Okay, so we talk as much as we can about the Time Lord Victorious project because it's one of the most ambitious things that can still happen during lockdown and continued mm-hmm. quarantine and everything. The Titan Comics aspect of it or facet of it, who are now currently kind of running with most of the pieces that have been released or are being released in this bracket of time as we're recording, this also falls around the time when we should have been doing San Diego Comic-Con. They shifted SDCC to be online as best they could, offering a ton of content. They're calling it SDCC at home. And there was a panel for Titan Comics to discuss their most recent contributions, which was great because you had things like Jody Hauser doing the writing and James Goss, who is sort of overseeing production of this entire block of or series. Sort of, yeah, call it a series, a comic series that goes along with this. So it's about 45 minute or so panel. Got some interesting parts. Sound quality on the Zoom call could drive you crazy after a while. I had to turn it way down because it was almost painful on the ears at times, but that's just semantics. But you do get an interesting insight into the comic book production process during these conditions, which is interesting enough. But also them talking about the number of spinning plates going on with this cross-platform initiative. Because up to this point, I've just been taking it off press releases and mm-hmm. what they're saying about, okay, BBC Audio is throwing in this thing, and then here's this novel, and then here's this comic, and Big Finish is going to be doing this, and here's an escape room that's going to be doing this. And you think, all right, well, that's kind of cool. I wonder how they arranged all this. But nobody would ever talk about the logistics of all these concurrent stories that are supposed to somehow stitch together. Well, mm-hmm. now you've got some of the principal creators talking about how complicated it is putting all this crap together, which is exactly what I wanted to know.
Yeah. It's really awesome seeing how they can manage something of this scale, because it is, there's a lot going on. And I mean, they kind of talked about how it's, you know, trying to fit pieces together where you've got, you know, you've got novels and you've got comic books and you've got all this stuff that has to work together, but also has to be independent of everything else.
Right.
You know, it has to be a story that can be enjoyed on its own without going and reading the novel, But if you read the novel, it's much better because you get the, and it's, that's hard to do on the best of days. But when you take something that's as dense as Doctor Who, I have no idea how they manage this.
You also have to be able to enjoy all those elements in any order based on when people have access to the different pieces.
That is my continuing concern. So now getting a little bit more of an insight based on what Goss and Hauser and our illustrators and a couple of other folks that were on the panel had to say about it, I understand about trying to keep it approachable and accessible regardless of where you drop in on the on the network of stories, I guess, if you will, or the web of stories. But does the chronology still matter in any respect? Because if that's the case, even between two books, I can understand in a comic series, yes, it's series. That's why they're sequenced as they are, and it's not terribly difficult to know, you know, that you're jumping in on the wrong issue. But if this audio story tees things up for a specific doctor, because this is a multi-doctor initiative that gets addressed later, but I don't find out about that because, well, thinking that through, maybe in the way that using the Big Finish model about how they're very clever about anytime the doctor talks about something that they've experienced, they make some sort of an offhand joke about, or maybe I haven't done it yet. I'm not really sure. Time is funny that way. That if I end up reading or listening to a story that explains something in a story I've already read, that I can look at that and say, oh, well, in a Whovian world, that it's just filling in the gaps for me. Yes, I got them out of sequence, but the Doctor lives out of sequence anyway, so I can give that a pass. Mm-hmm. I hope. But yeah, so there's more to come with this. It seems like right now Titan is sort of running with the baton. We've had a considerable amount of audio contributions and a few novels that were the first things out of the gate. I'm waiting for some digital content at this point. I'm really hoping that there are going to be some pieces in there, because that's really going to mean that the folks who are hesitant about this, that aren't sure that they can or want to drop a dime on this, can get some little vignette, little something as a digital release, some little streaming component that says, oh, and this is part of a big, I want to know where this goes, so I'll go spend, you know, $7 on this book, or I'll go, you know, drop $5 on this comic, or I'll go spend $12 on this audio thing to see where this goes, because now that I understand the scale of what they're doing, I'm more invested. But I think they're going to have to give, just knowing the nature of a lot of the consuming public, I think they're going to need to give them a little bit more to chew on. Some free stuff, some teasers, some previews, or some, you know, give them a first chapter or something to entice them to go purchase. Because if you were to, based on everything we've seen drop so far, if you were to spend all you needed to get all the pieces, this is going to add up. It's a big investment.
This is true.
So, very true. And I'm cheap. So, just speaking personally.
Yeah.
So, speaking of cheap, Big Finish, here's my cry. After I've already given them hundreds.
This is how they can afford to do it.
Yeah, right? Although I noticed that some of the things that they're going to start handing out free are things I already own. But, all right. That's fair. I get it. So they have already, as we said during the heart of the lockdown period, they went for weeks and handed out free material. They were a great array of stuff from their catalogs and their various ranges. They have not stopped. In fact, they're going to now make it a sort of a permanent part of their structure. So every week on their digital catalog, they are going to have a section for weekly freebies, which is kind of cool. It's typically going to be a story out of one of their, you know, any volume you pick up from them, regardless of what the range is, usually like 3 to 4 stories. Mm-hmm. So, but each story is close to anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour audio play or audio production. So you've got a complete story there. And they're jumping out the gate here with a Jago and Lightfoot story, which is great. I mean, those two are hilarious and always engaging. And it'll just be kind of like a roulette wheel to see what you get in the weeks to come. So
I'm excited about this, because there's a lot of stuff that that has fallen through the cracks. That I mean, that you can only listen to so much stuff.
Yeah.
And so I've missed a lot of things just because it's, you know, It's on my list, but the list keeps growing, and where it is on the list can vary from one day to the next. So
that's true. Yeah, I've only had the time really to devote to the Ravenous series for, you know, so I get my Eighth Doctor fix, and the Missy series, because, well, because it's a Missy series.
Missy, yeah.
But I mean, there is so, I mean, we've talked about this for weeks. I mean, they just keep cranking out material, and they are getting such accolades for continuing to do what they can, given the conditions of the way that they have to do their productions, but still producing tons and tons of material on a weekly basis. Their calendar has barely hiccuped as a result of this. So, shades of how to do things right, I suppose. So yeah, there you go. Free stuff. All good free stuff. And free panels. Like, you didn't even have to buy a badge for SDCC this year. So, hey.
Yay.
I'm Chris Farrell from the All Things Good and Nerdy podcast, a wacky weekend morning show, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out right now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and the opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other awesome geeky shows over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Next week, we're going to be coming back with Season 2, Episode 3 of Torchwood, To the Last Man.
Yeah. So, I was going to make some sort of a horrible joke about, you know, this Bon Jovi thing about, you know, Tommy's chilling out on the block rather than Tommy's got a six-string and hawk. But, yeah, so you got the World War I soldier who they keep thawing out on the regular. And then they've got the issue with the Rift because there's stuff from his era that's popping up. And who better to ask than the stiff in a box that they keep having to talk to. I wonder if this has anything to do, the whole idea of thawing him out regularly. This predated the Doctor Who Christmas special with, you know, with our singing to the fish and thawing out for a day. You got to wonder. I don't know. I think there's a connection. I think there is. I'm going with that. Because it's not far of a jump from World War I to Christmas, right?
Right. Yeah. No, of course not. I mean, yeah.
Got to be. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. I don't remember.
I'm not even going to ask Haley because I know she doesn't remember it.
No, I don't remember anything. No.
Anyway, this has been episode 389 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, has anybody seen my platform shoes? Did the bull get into them again?
He was very tall. And this is Gear saying, I decree you shall hear from us next week. Yes, it shall be.
And this is Haley saying, not you, the TARDIS.
We'll see you guys next week.
LLZ.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2020. See you next week.